Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Power of Life on the World Puja Network. I'm your host, Maureen Moss, and together with my guest, Dr. Joan King, tonight we are going to delve into cellular wisdom, the place where fundamental truths for living an authentic, fulfilling life are coded in our elegantly complex dance of chemical and energetic interactions within and between ourselves. This is going to make for a very fun and unique and very insightful interview, no doubt. My guest, Dr. Joan King, for those of you that haven't been blessed to have read her books yet, is a multifaceted woman, to be sure. She is a neuroscientist, a speaker, professional and personal coach, and the author of Cellular Wisdom, a book that captured my attention the moment I opened it. And she has upcoming books, The Cellular Wisdom for Women, Cellular Wisdom for Relationships, and Cellular Wisdom for Business, which will undoubtedly do the same for our new relationships as we move into this ascension process, as Cellular Wisdom has already. Joan is also a professor at Tufts University Schools of Medicine, or she was, actually, for 20 years, and she served as chair of the Department of Anatomy and Cellular Biology for the Schools of Medicine. Joan envisioned, this is what I love, she envisioned first and then created a multimedia resource center on the Boston campus and also developed and directed the Center of Research in Reproduction at Tufts University for 5 years. Joan now is engaged in scientific studies for nearly half a century and has founded the Beyond Success and Transition Pathways, each dedicated to life's ultimate potentials. Carolyn May said, wow, this is one brilliant woman. And Dr. Jean Houston said quite the same about her. So we're going to find out more about what Joan has to say about cellular wisdom. And you can also find her at cellular-wisdom.com. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you, Maureen. I'm delighted to be here.
We're so excited that you're here. And this is such a great and important topic, I believe, to be talking about right now as we're moving through this ascension process. And so many different mutations are going on within our body. So I think this is going to be a huge help to our guests worldwide.
I also think it's a resource that we have ignored for far too long.
Yes, indeed it is. And, you know, I want to ask you what the obvious question would be, Joan, is what is cellular wisdom?
Well, the term is one I've coined. And the reason I've put those two words in close juxtaposition to each other is that our cells are in the most intimate contact with life force that courses through them moment by moment. And should there be a skip of a moment, the cells would die. And I often ask people who say to me, well, what does that mean? And if you have ever watched someone die, you know what that means. In one moment, they are breathing, even if very shallowly. And even if they can't speak, you sense the presence of a personality. The moment they die, they're a corpse. There is no more life energy that's coursing through the body. So our cells are in intimate contact with life.
And the cellular body has incredible intelligence and activates all of our outward relationships as well, do they not?
Absolutely. And so that's why I use the word wisdom, because this energy, this life energy that sustains us, is the same energy that led the evolution of the development of molecules, the billions of years that it took for cells to develop and then cells to learn how to cooperate, specialize, and integrate with each other to form multicellular organisms such as our bodies. In that life force is that ancient wisdom. And that means that ancient wisdom is as close to us as the life force in ourselves.
How do we get to it?
First of all, we start to listen. This means not talk. This means be quiet. This means listen at a deeper level than you've ever listened before, because cells don't shout. They're, the life force that comes in with its wisdom gives you signals. Most of them are not verbal. They are signals such as somebody says, why don't we go do such and such? And you just feel in your body somewhere. And we each tend to feel it in a different place. Some people might feel a squeeze in the head. I feel a squeeze in my gut. Other people feel a tightening of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
If you start to pay attention to those signals, you'll realize it's not wise for you to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also important to pay attention to the opposite, and that is, how do you feel after you've been openly generous with someone when you have expected no return? What does that feel like? For most of us, it feels very expansive.
Yes.
It feels like your spirit has just gotten bigger. That's the signal that you're on the right track.
So let me ask you this, Joan, and we're certainly going to get into it deeper and deeper, but since you brought that up to get silent and then listen,
yes,
how do we distinguish the difference? When we go into silence, we've often been taught to learn to listen to the language of the heart.
Right.
And, or you said when you get the information, you, different people feel it in a different way, a squeezing in their head, a tightening in their stomach or in their heart. And so others may say, well, isn't that my intuition? So how do we discern, Joan, the difference between the language of the cells, the language of our heart, and our intuitive response?
Okay. First of all, they're obviously all related.
Right.
They are not. And they are related like a pebble drops into a pond. The pebble is the life force entering the cells. The first place that life force enters is our bodies. So the language of the cells is fundamental to the language of the heart and intuition. It is as though the language of the heart is one of those ripples on in the pond after you drop in the pebble. And the intuition is an outcome of you tuning in, even if you don't know you're tuning in, to the energy of your cells. There is so much we know that we don't know that we know. And I'm going to say that again. There is so much we know that we don't know that we know.
Right. And it's like saying, it's like understanding the veils of forgetfulness coming upon us and knowing as a result we don't know what we know, and then having them begin to be lifted off and having all of these rememberings or aha moments are like, oh, I knew that.
Absolutely. You used, Maureen, you used the key word remembering. We have a storehouse of wisdom within us, pulsing all the time, vital, vibrant energy. And it isn't a question of learning. We already have it. It is a question of remembering. And most importantly, it's not putting the roadblocks up that stop the flow of energy. If you watch what you say, I don't know how to do this. Oh, that's the worst thing you could say.
Because your body believes everything you say, correct?
Absolutely. And you stop that flow of energy, and sure enough, you're not going to get the energy to know how. What you can substitute, language that I substitute, is show me. Show me how.
And when we say show me how, we're reframing that, obviously, and we're saying show me how, is the intelligence of ourselves then activated in a way to show us how, or
absolutely,
are we saying that to the universe, the complete universe, show me?
Well, it's both, because the energy that enters our cells is the same energy that keeps the 300,000 galaxies, each with 300,000 stars, in the harmony of the energy interconnections in the universe. The life force we have is that energy as well. And so when we pay attention to the wisdom of ourselves, we're also paying attention to the energy that is about us throughout the universe. And I want to give you an example, and I can't give you the full details, but I just want to give you the sketch of a short story that shows this.
Perfect.
I wanted to take a certain action, which was really significant to me, ending one part of my life and beginning another. And I at the moment, didn't know how to do it. So I said to the universe, show me. There is a way. Show me how to do this. And sure enough, I get a telephone call from a sales lady I had worked with who said that she had a friend she had been wanting to introduce me to. The friend had been in the business world, and we're having lunch, and out of my mouth escapes this long sentence, you wouldn't be the kind of person that could tell me how to do blah, 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 would you? And she said, yes, I would. Mm. And we worked together for about 3 months with a positive outcome to what I wanted to do. The universe and the life energy of myself showed me how, because I opened the door to the possibility by saying, show me. If I were to say, and I could have said it because the circumstances were such, I could have said, there's no way this is going to happen.
Mm.
And there would have been no way for that to happen.
Is that, Joan, like creating an intention? Or is that more definitive when you just say, show me? Because it's like saying, I know that this can be done. Show me.
It's more, well, I think an intention is a good first step. And the intention is, I want to bring this into my life, or I want this in my life to change. And that's good, because that's like knocking on the door, saying, I want to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, and the next step, is to bring that intention to a knowing. I know it can happen. I may not see how at the moment, and that's not important. Because the universe can show you how. How is not the right question. It's what that is the right question. Knowing that what you want can happen.
And in this time of amplified frequency and the space-time continuum, do you realize or recognize that there is a much shorter difference between, I'm going to use show me, I love this, show me, and then the manifestation of that?
I do. And I think it's both positive and negative. As soon as you say, there's no way this can happen, it's almost like you can hear a million doors slam shut.
Wow.
And as soon as you say, show me, it's like, it's almost like the universe gets excited, because here you are saying, I want to align with the truth of who I am in doing this. And what's the universe about but manifesting the truth of who we are? That's why we're here. And so you can almost feel the excited energy of the universe in response. Mm-hmm. You can hear 1,000 doors open.
That's what I was going to ask you. Once, if we have shut the doors previously by our not remembering what you are now beautifully sharing with us, if we have this aha moment, and all of our audience will, I am certain, when they hear that, and they go, oh my God, show me, will the doors then swing back open?
Absolutely. Life is a moment by moment exchange of energy. Mm. You don't have to engage in guilt. I didn't do this before. Well, you're learning how to do it now, and this is the perfect time. And it is absolutely doable in an instant.
In an instant. What about when the universe says, or we've all heard this, our prayers are answered and sometimes they're not answered in the way in which we would like to have them answered?
Absolutely. And that's true. And it's because we have a limited view of what we're looking for. And I think, and I know this is going to be one of the topics we're going to discuss, it's particularly appropriate in the in the realm of abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a limited way of thinking about abundance. That means so many green dollars in our hand at a specific time. But what if somebody let you use their beautiful mountain home for a year? What if somebody came with gifts of computers and set them up for you? What if somebody turned over a wardrobe of beautiful clothes for you to have? What if you enjoyed greater health every day? What if your circle of friends all of a sudden included fabulous people that you resonate with so deeply? Those are manifestations of abundance.
And so do you say, Joan, show me what? If you were going to desire abundance in any number of those absolute abundant ways that you just spoke of, how would you preface the sentence to your cellular wisdom?
Show me the abundance in my life. First of all, you have to see the abundance that's already there. Because if you're ignoring the abundance that's currently in your life, then the universe figures, why give it to them? They don't recognize it when they get it.
Mm.
So the first step is gratitude.
Yes.
Gratitude for the abundance that is already present. Take time. It could take, 20 minutes a day for a week for you to write, I'm so grateful for. At the end of that week, bring all those things together, and there is a profile of abundance that you have in your life. Now, you want more abundance. So you would say, show me how to open to the abundance that is awaiting me.
And the way will be made manifest if
we're
just paying attention. It's like that God story when somebody's in the middle of the ocean and they're saying, somebody please help me. And, the plane has dropped down a line and a boat's gone by and oars have been thrown over. And somebody's sitting there going, where's my help? So we really have to be aware, really, really, really witnessing every moment, right?
And that's where I believe conscious awareness is the key to bringing that energy that we recognize as wisdom from our bodies that comes through our life force, bringing it into the world. Calling that person you all of a sudden thought of, writing a handwritten note to somebody you thought of, saying yes to something that you might have said no to before, saying no to something you might have said yes to before.
Paying attention.
Yes.
Paying attention. I've read that you had said that only when cells connect with other cells that they fulfill their potential.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to ask you this. When I read that, is there a difference between the cell's potential and our soul's potential, Joan?
No. Because we are all part of each other. There is no doubt that none of us, well, the phrase from Thomas Merton, no man is an island.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize and often evoke our greatest potential in interaction with other people. Part of why I love radio shows like this is that you will ask me a question I might not have ever thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
And in answering it, I bring up from my wisdom a combination of concepts I may not have put together before.
That's a beautiful thing about radio or speaking or even writing. It's fantastic. Yes,
it is. And that's why going off alone and being in a cave, and there are many stories told of people who went into caves and meditated for 5 years, come down into the city, get their toe stubbed, and then issue out this vile language. Mm. And so it's in interaction that we recognize the greatness in other people, regardless of the illusion of their fragility. And we are able to evoke the greatness that is within us.
We are able to. I know you wrote, actually, I was struck by a quote that you wrote in relationship to that from Walter Russell. and where he says genius is self-bestowed and mediocrity is self-inflicted.
That's right.
Yes, I love that.
And he was a self-made man. He was a contemporary of Tom Watson, who founded IBM. I don't think he finished the sixth grade. Yet he became a painter, a sculptor, an ice skater, and a founder of a university.
And do you believe that it was as a result of tapping into the body's intelligence, the cellular wisdom, the heart wisdom, the soul wisdom, whatever?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you think he learned how to do that?
Well, and there's a little book written by Glenn Clark about him. It's about the secrets of the universe. Mm-hmm. And he interviewed Walter Russell, and he asked him exactly that. And the first thing he said was, "I was grateful for everything I received and expected nothing more." And what he meant by expected nothing more, he gives the story of having to leave school and work as a servant in some kind of industry. I can't remember exactly what. But whenever somebody gave him a tip, the first thing he would do is refuse the tip. And the people would look at him like, "Why are you refusing the tip?" And his answer was, "Because I love doing it." And so then they'd tip him twice as much, and he would take it. But it wasn't like he was holding out his hand saying, "The universe owes me this," in a demanding way. In the service that he was performing, he loved it. He loved being attentive to people. And I think in the loving, we focus so much of what we don't want.
Right.
Or what we want in a limited way, like I want a red Jaguar or I want a new car. It's like having this giant lens, and we hone it down so you can only see a pea in it instead of seeing the universe in it. And conscious awareness is a matter of changing the perspective so that you get a bigger and bigger and bigger perspective. And as you do, you recognize our interconnection. You couldn't have the clothes on that you're wearing if somebody didn't grow the cotton or make the chemical, if somebody didn't make the pattern, if somebody didn't sew it, if somebody didn't sell it, if you didn't buy it, will somebody give it to you? And that's a very rudimentary example. But we are absolutely connected to each other in energy and in exchange of energy all the time. And that's why it's really important. If you have people in your life that drain your energy, get away from them.
And get away from them. Well, that's absolutely, I think that's something that most of us now are really beginning to realize, that our energy is so precious. We cannot have it be sucked out of us, and we can't afford to leak it by discordant thoughts.
Exactly, and by judging other people. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you might say, "Well, Joan, you're just contradicting yourself. You just said if there's somebody draining your energy, get away from them. Isn't that a judgment?" There is a difference between judgment and assessment. Assessment says, my inner wisdom is telling me this isn't good for me. Judgment is, that's a bad person.
Excellent example.
And assessment is not judgment. It's assessing what's good and not good for you, depending upon your connection to your own deeper cellular wisdom. They might be fine for somebody else. They're just not fine for you.
Right. And what does toxic relationships do? Do they interfere with our cellular wisdom?
Yes.
In essence, our actions that we're taking in that toxic relationship, do they interfere?
Absolutely, because watch yourself. I was coaching a young woman the other day, and this is such a perfect example, who was on the fence about breaking up with a boyfriend that she had been with for the last 2 years. And I said, there is one question I'm going to ask you, and the answer to that will absolutely let you know, without a shadow of a doubt, if you should break up with him or not. And I said, do you like who you are when you are with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like who you are when you are with that person, then all that person is doing is reinforcing the negative part of who you are, and that is not going to lead to your expansive thriving.
You know, that you said that, very interesting, Joan, because I think we've heard in the past, of course, that we draw to us the person that we need to learn the most about our unhealed parts with. How does that fit in with what you just said, which I happen to agree with what you just said tremendously.
Uh-huh.
But how does that years and years and years of advice given that way, is that archaic advice any longer?
Well, it doesn't have to last forever. That's the problem. We have interpreted that to mean, so let's say an irascible person comes into your life, okay? And maybe that's an important time for you to understand an aspect of compassion that you haven't understood before. It does not mean that you have to embrace this person to be a part of your life forever. You can say, what is it? You can ask your own cellular wisdom, what is it I'm to learn in this situation? And when you feel the answer, and how do you feel the answer? By that expansive feeling. So you say to yourself, is it compassion? And you get this, oh yeah, that's it. So go ahead and show compassion to that person. And then let them go.
Yeah. People are in our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I often say, I think people get those confused.
Maureen, that is wise advice. Yes.
And so if we're paying attention, I had a friend of mine say to me, you know, Maureen, if you know that in the beginning, it will save you so much aggravation at the end. And so ask yourself, he said, just ask yourself in the moment of meeting someone new, is this for a reason, a season, or a lifetime? And if you get quiet, he didn't call it cellular wisdom, he just called it get quiet,
yes,
you will know, not believe or think, you will know the answer.
Absolutely. This man was tapping into his cellular wisdom without calling it that. And we don't have to call it that. I just use that phrase.
It's a wonderful phrase, though, Joan, because I think it connects us back, which we really need to, with all of the parts that run this temple of ours that we are housing our spirit in for this moment or this incarnation.
Well,
so I think it's a wonderful.
We are hybrids. We are spirit-matter hybrids. And by the way, our spirit is a lot bigger than our body. So I would rephrase what you said and said, our spirit innervates our body. It
Very
doesn't
good.
House our spirit, because our spirit is so much bigger, which is why when you meet someone and you touch spirit to spirit before you shake hands, you know what you feel.
That's so true. What about people that have, and I've heard this from people before, Joan, that say, you know, I just had a sense of that person before they, quote-unquote, shook hands or hugged them or whatever, but they felt, oh, no, that's a judgment. That's just a judgment. I don't think I should maintain or not maintain a relationship based on that first impression before I got to know them. What do you have to say about that?
Pay attention to that first
impression.
I really believe that now.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
It's different if you're a person who has been practicing judgment. If your conscious awareness has been, oh, look at that suit, that's probably a hand-me-down, or, oh, look at those shoes, they're not clean. If you've been in that state of conscious awareness, and that's the first thing that comes to you, then you have a way to go, to let go of judgment before you can trust your inner perceptions, because you've been hiding your inner perceptions behind this facade of judgment. You know, it isn't an expensive suit. It's not a designer suit. Oh, my God. You know, if that's the level of thinking you've been having, then, yes, I wouldn't trust that judgment, because you've been hiding your true responsiveness.
That is such a valid and valuable point. And the way that you express that allows a softening toward ourselves, just an awareness of, okay, yes, I've been harboring behind or hiding behind judgment. Okay, let me get rid of this so that I can really tap into the cellular wisdom.
Absolutely. And in fact, you can use show me. Show me how to reduce this judgment. I don't want it anymore.
Oh, that's perfect. And what do you think the universe's response would be to show me how to reduce that judgment? Would more opportunities come for judgment to be practiced or not any longer?
It all depends upon your level of understanding. Mm-hmm. If it has been like an aha, then it probably you'll encounter someone who might look awful and have the spirit of an angel. And you'll recognize the spirit of the angel in that person. But if you're still shedding those levels of judgment, it just may take a while. I was named after Joan of Arc, and I often use her as a spiritual advisor. And I say, show me your sword of truth to cut through the illusion and let me see the reality.
Do you ever get in the way of your own self?
Oh, of course. I'm a human being. every one of us will until we aren't the hybrids, because as a hybrid, we have accepted limitation. We cannot see all color. We cannot hear all sound. We cannot feel all vibrations. We are limited. The degree to which we increase our expansiveness, we are less and less limited. But every once in a while, it'll hit you in the head. And, you know, I love this story, and I don't remember about the guru that it was, but there was a guru, and one of his disciples decided he disliked that guru, and he was going to go off and mimeograph a sheet. And this is in the time when there was purple jelly mimeograph, mm-hmm. of all the things that were wrong with the guru, and then distribute them to his current disciples. And the current disciples, knowing what was going on, were kind of on pins and needles waiting to see what the guru was going to do. So the guru picks up the sheet of paper, and he looks at it, and he immediately busts out laughing. And his current disciples say, what are you laughing about? And he said, oh, if he'd only come to me, I could have told him so many more.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that a wonderful, you know, that reminds me of a story that, and I'll share this because I like us to have conversations on World Puja as well.
Absolutely.
I was listening to Debbie Ford. Do you know who she wrote The Dark Side of the Light Chaser speaking? And she was talking about she had been before a group of people who were analyzing her delivery and her presentation. And somebody in the audience said, boy, are you a bitch. And she said, I knew that. How did you know that? Same of story. That's great.
There are times when I fall on my face. The difference is I recognize that was a momentary failure.
A momentary failure.
Life pulses moment by moment. And so I will ask, how can I embrace my expansiveness? I don't want to live in this limitation that I just fell on my face about. How do I embrace? Show me.
And prepare for the answer.
Yes.
Because it will show up, and it will show up quickly.
It will. Sometimes I'll get an email in a few minutes and somebody will say, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me and really listen to my problem. And that was my answer.
Mm-hmm.
Take the time to talk and really listen.
So you write that our bodies actually have 100 trillion cells. So we've got a lot to listen to. Right?
We've got a lot to listen to.
A lot to listen to. And you say, you know, obviously we know this, that each one is a dynamic living entity consciously engaged in the energetic dance of life.
Absolutely.
How do we hear what they're all saying, or is there a command central somewhere?
Every one of them is the command central. There is not even though I'm a neuroscientist and I know that the brain and nervous system have seminal, integral functions for us to see, walk, talk, hear, we are a synergy of equals. All of our cells contribute to our life force. It's not like we could do without our muscle cells. If we did, we'd be a pile of bones on the floor. Or that we could do without any particular organ. If we, without our digestive system, we die. We couldn't digest food. We couldn't absorb it. We couldn't nourish ourselves. Our cells live in total collaboration. Each of them has unique functions, but they're all as important. And the way we begin to listen to them is by going to, cells know how to respond to the life force. They're wide open unless we shut them down.
All 100 trillion cells.
All of them. They're
okay.
Why it's we who shut down their energy. If we say, oh, gosh, I feel awful this morning. I can't move. Well, guess what? You're going to have
awful.
A hard time moving. Whereas if you honor yourselves and you say, teach me, show me how you do this. I want to be as open to life as you are.
And let me ask you this. When, like, for instance, red blood cells, for example, they replace themselves every 90 days.
Right.
So when cells replace themselves, Joan,
right.
How does cellular exchange then affect the wisdom, ultimately, our personal lives?
Sure. In the 90 days that those red blood cells are active, they are of such single focus. The reason they die in 90 days is they have no nucleus to sustain them. They're like an empty bag filled with the capability of carrying oxygen into the tissues and taking away the waste products. And they're so focused on that they give their life for it. They do nothing else but that. But they're constantly replenished in the marrow of our bones, and they're made over and over again. And the reason that they so evolved to that point is that by not having any other function but that function, they do it extraordinarily well. What about children who come into our lives maybe only during pregnancy? Maybe only during the first weeks of life, maybe only till they're 5 or 10 years old, and they die. And we say, how could that happen? It could happen because they've fulfilled their purpose. They've done it.
And the cells know. The cells actually carry our particular blueprint, do they not?
Absolutely.
So when that blueprint, like you just spoke of, a child who dies at 5 or 4 or whatever, that blueprint was already in there to only, of course, live until that age. And you know what people would ask? But why? Why through me did that happen?
Well, you know, wisdom does not always encompass knowledge. They are very different things. Knowledge is information. Wisdom is truth.
Right.
And I can't explain in knowledge why everything happens the way it does in the universe with my limited consciousness, my ability to think. And if you think about this, we cannot, quote, understand the mysteries of the world. I cannot understand the life force. We don't understand electricity.
And we don't need to, apparently.
We use it.
We just do it while we're here.
But just because you can't explain something is no reason to make a decision about it or not about it. Because there is a wisdom that's a different kind of knowing. It's not information. It's not accumulated information, which is what we usually mean when we use the word knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more active word of knowing when something is right for you. Those are the most important decisions in your life.
I was once told that when you know something, there is not another question you ever ask about that again.
Well, I think the phrase that says it so well is, a thousand difficulties does not constitute a doubt.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I want to turn this for a moment, Joan, because you talk a lot about dreams in cellular wisdom, and that cellular wisdom actually provides us with a model for what we have to do to activate our life dreams. So apparently the model is in some form of a cellular code, I would gather.
Right.
Is there a trigger that opens the code and sets the process of dream activation in motion?
Absolutely. So first of all, let me tell you why I think dreams are so important. I think our dreams are part of that expansive self that I talk about. And if somebody tells me, but it's only in my imagination, my answer is, so why do you think you imagined it? If you can imagine it, it's part of your dream. It's part of your expansive self. We have more potential than we can ever begin to tap in a million lifetimes. We have so much potential. What is the trigger? Desire.
Mm.
Desire, now I don't mean desire in a grabby, accumulative
right.
way. I mean desire in wanting to be the expansive self that you can be. Usually what triggers a dream coming true, I mean, just think of Martin Luther King. Every thought that man had was about how people of color could be equal and free and live in this world as appreciated, as he said about his five children, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. His dream was driven by this desire for equality and freedom for all people.
So would you say that his cellular wisdom, by his life's work and active work, he obviously had very exuberant cells, and there is a way to activate that kind of exuberance within us, isn't there?
Absolutely.
And certainly he modeled that.
All of us have cells as exuberant as Martin Luther King. Usually we shut them down by telling ourselves what we can't do. Who do you think you are to think about doing that? What kind of credentials do you have to go do that? And often in our society, credentials get in the way. I mean, Walter Russell stopped school at about sixth grade. He founded a university. You know, people would say, what gives him the credentials to do that? It's your desire. Because in the desire is this element of wanting to make a contribution to the world. And, you know, I think of it this way. If the universe were a puzzle and you're a piece of the puzzle and you don't make your contribution to the world, the whole will always remain because nobody else can make the contribution that you make.
So the whole remains, and that's another thing that I think we have heard other people speak about. If you don't do your part, God will give it to somebody else to do.
Yes, but they won't do it the way you
did it.
They
won't do it the way
they
you did it.
They won't do it. I mean, 10 people could write a book on cellular wisdom, and I assure you there will be 10 different books.
But they won't write it the way Joan King wrote it.
That's right. And I won't write it the way person A, B, C would write it.
Right.
We all have, and some of us resonate with some, and we don't resonate with the others, but that is not a reflection of validity. In other words, there are going to be people who don't like what I say, and that's fine. I'm not writing for them.
Mm-hmm.
I often use the example of the hormone estrogen circulating in the blood. or the hormone testosterone circulating in the blood. The only way those hormones have action is because there are specific organs that have the receptors for that particular molecule. If the organ does not have a receptor for that molecule, then it will think it's irrelevant.
What does it need in terms of it having a receptor? Are we responsible for ensuring that it has that receptor, or does it just have it?
No, we're not. In fact, because some organ doesn't have the receptor, does it make the hormone irrelevant? Of course not, because all the other ones do. Our obligation is not how our contribution is received. It's only putting it out there.
As I call it, living up to what light we have.
Exactly. And it will be accepted or used or valued by the people who resonate with it.
Right. In your book, you also, I noticed, have some really, really insightful questionnaires.
Yes.
And so often people have questionnaires and they're very redundant in their nature. These were very unique. Why was it important for you to have your particular questionnaires about determining if we are prepared to change? In your book, Cellular Wisdom.
Well, you know, I'm a coach. And what a coach's philosophy is the same as my Cellular Wisdom philosophy. We have within us all the answers to the issues in our lives. No one else is going to give you the answer you want to hear. It's inside you. But somebody can provide the questions, and I hone my questions so that they can be really of use to the person answering them, to open up some area of feeling, of knowing, of being they might not have seen before. Mm-hmm. It's important that we take certain steps at certain times. Our bodies teach us this. There's a little clock in our brains that actually just ticks away in a rhythm. And in fact, that rhythm just goes on all the time, and the rest of our organs respond to that rhythm, and the rhythms are different for each of us. So it's important that we know when's the time for the right step. It may be that there's a specific time when this would be where you would have all the resources available to assist you in doing something. And so a lot of my questionnaires are about preparedness, about getting to that place where you've put in place all the resources that you need to assist you in doing what it is you want to do.
So is timing everything?
Timing, it's not everything. Desire is everything. But timing is, it's just like desire is the pebble that's dropped in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make those ripples change. Once
Right.
you drop that pebble, those ripples are there. So recognizing the timing will increase your effectiveness in bringing what you want into the world.
So how do we really recognize, Joan, for sure, within ourselves, knowing that we have a mind and an ego also in operation, judgments, all those human things that we have, how do we know, is there a way to know for sure right timing?
That expansive feeling. When you sit quietly and you start to see yourself in that situation, taking the steps that you want to take because time doesn't really exist. So you actually can go forth in time and see yourself doing it. As you see yourself doing it, how does it feel?
Mm.
Does it feel expansive? Now, even if it's difficult, think of how it would feel if it was done.
So it's a power of imagination that the mystic Neville actually wrote about back in the 50s. He was a mystic in Barbados and talked about go to the end of the feeling. And see
Absolutely.
How you feel. Yeah.
That's perfect, Maureen. That's perfect. Yes. And we always have that within us, and we have access to knowing it. We just ignore it most of the time.
You know, I think that's so interesting. I was speaking to a client the other day, and she was saying, I don't know what I really want to do. And I was working with her to get to the truth about that, because of course she does.
Of course she does.
I said to her, if nothing was in the way, you weren't married, you didn't have your child, whatever all the other things are in your life, if you could do one thing, what would it do? And she said, well, I really love photography. So I said to her, okay, if a photographer came to your door today and said, I am looking for an assistant, what would you say? And what she did was she came up with a litany of excuses about why she probably couldn't take the job right now. So my question to you about that is that so many people say to me, Maureen, what is my life's purpose? Not like I have the answer, not like you have the answer, and certainly not like any psychic or anybody else has the answer.
That's
Does
right.
the cellular wisdom have the answer?
Absolutely, and you have it inside, as you and I both know. And the issue is pay attention to what attracts you. Now, what that woman that you said had all the reasons why she couldn't take the job.
Yep.
It can be phrased in another way. What stops her from collecting photographs she loves? What stops her from taking photographs whenever her family is engaged in whatever?
Mm-hmm.
What stops her from sharing her love for photography with other people in maybe a book club? What stops her from expressing that interest? So maybe she can't take the job, but there's nothing that stops her from expressing the interest, and the interest can grow. And what can happen is her family can start to say, oh, my goodness, you're really good at this.
And
have
start
you
to
ever
feed.
Thought, yeah, have you ever thought of publishing some of your pictures?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you see, when she's giving you all the no answers, she's
mm-hmm.
living in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
She alone wants this, and she can't do it because the rest of the world is demanding that she do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So she's living like encapsulated in this horrible prison that she sees. When she begins to engage to whatever degree she can engage in it, in expressing her love of it, it will be like a little light, like a little tea light in a very dark room. That tea light gives a lot of light if that room is black.
It's very dark.
And before long, it'll be recognized, and she will start to recruit people. And it may not be a job at first. It may be a photography club. It may be a class. But eventually, those steps are energy.
Mm-hmm.
That energy is going to grow. And the growth of that energy is going to lead to those thousand doors opening up.
So when oftentimes people, I believe the underlying reason that people often don't do the things that they say or feel in themselves they really want to do is fear of failure.
Absolutely.
And what I'm hearing from you is beautiful, that there's just these little incremental steps that one can take that's between themselves and their desire, themselves and their passion, to start to build a momentum of excitement within themselves.
Absolutely.
To create something really in the world with it. Yes?
Beautifully put, Maureen. Beautifully put.
I want to ask you this, and as we close out the show, as we move, Joan, closer and closer to this ascension and consciousness, and we're moving into each day more into our ascension and consciousness or into our divine natures, as we round the corner, so to speak, on this last leg of the third and fourth dimensional tour of duty, if you will, what's happening with our cellular bodies? Because there are a lot of mutations going on in our physical bodies.
Well, we only use about 10% of the DNA in our cells. There's a whole lot of DNA that's waiting to be used.
And some of it's being reconnected now, as I'm understanding it.
And some of it is starting. A lot of scientists call it junk DNA
mm-hmm.
because they don't understand what it's for. It doesn't mean because we don't understand what it's for that it's junk DNA. So that... I mean, just consider this. We come from an egg and a sperm. We have one set of DNA, and yet, look, we got muscle, we got bone, we've got eyes, we've got teeth, we've got hair. Look at that one set of DNA in its multiple expressions. And that's only a tenth of what we've got. So there's an enormous amount that's there waiting for us to say, yes. I mean, one of the best things that we can walk around all day long saying is yes to life.
I like show me. I was thinking about going out and getting a T-shirt that just says show me, so I am constantly reminded.
Absolutely.
Just show me.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that our consciousness will stop being so limited. We'll stop looking at the world like with a lens that can only see a pea and open that lens to be bigger and bigger and bigger so that we see the greatness in people, the relationships between people. I mean, look at the difference between our understanding of relationships to people around the globe
mm-hmm.
compared to the 50s of how we saw our relationships to people around the globe.
Absolutely.
I mean, that lens has shifted.
Well, our potential for all things has expanded, and whether we choose to expand into it or not is up to us.
Well, the unity is there.
Yes.
The unity of all things, all peoples, all places is there. We can start to open to that reality.
And we have all the support from all the universes above us, around us, supporting our opening to that.
Absolutely. In fact, I often tell people, call forth what you need. The universe is awaiting your call.
And on that note, Dr. Joan King, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. Your book, Cellular Wisdom, I highly recommend to all of our audience. It really gives us a different insight into more of who we are. Joan also, as she mentioned, she's a coach, and she's one heck of a coach. You can find out more about her on her website at www.cellular-wisdom.com. Do you have an email, Joan, that people can write to you?
Absolutely. And I have a second website, which is more devoted to coaching, which is www.beyond-success.com. And my email is Joan King, all lowercase, at beyond-success.com.
Fantastic. What a pleasure. I'd love to invite you back again to join us. You are a plethora of information, knowledge, and wisdom that we can absolutely use right now in this time of our ascension. And so for tonight, Joan, thank you again. So appreciate you.
You're welcome. And yes, invite me back.
Oh, consider this an invitation. Consider, and you and I will talk soon. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. This is your host, Maureen Moss, reminding you to love yourself and yourselves. It's the path to your highest potential. Namaste.